This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Jimmy. Welcome to episode 79 of Feed Room Chemist. I am excited to be back with you all this week for an episode on haylage. I will explain what haylage or baylage is. I will talk to you about everything you need to know if you are thinking about feeding haylage to your horses. And then I'm going to cover some of the specific things that haylage won't provide to your horses, so you know what maybe needs to be added back into the diet to fill those gaps. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that I finally have social media channels. So go follow me on Facebook and Instagram. I'm using the handle at Dr. Jimmy. That's at DRJYME. Speaking of that, I posted a poll on my social media stories this week. There were two different pictures of hay, and I asked people to vote for the protein content that you believed each one to be. So I gave basically two choices of protein with each picture of hay. Now I know that stories on social media channels only last for like 24 hours or something short like that. So I did go ahead and repost a picture of those two forages side by side on my news feeds. So if anyone wants to go check out exactly what I'm talking about, you can find that picture. Okay, so I have two forages. They are both grass hays. One is kind of a little bit of a yellowish brown color, and it looks just kind of blah, while the other one is visibly green and looks definitely much more appealing. So in the poll, I had asked people to vote on the protein content of each one, and the numbers that people turned in ranged between 4% and 12%. So as expected, most people thought that the brownish or more yellowy colored hay would test lower in protein than the greener hay. There were some guesses that the brown hay was as low as 4% protein and as high as 10% protein. And then the green hay guesses were as low as 8% and as high as 18% protein. So again, if you haven't looked at that picture yet, I really encourage you to do so and make a guess real quick for yourself before I give you the answer on what the difference is between the two. So again, if you want to go find it, go to either Facebook or Instagram, search at Dr. Jimmy, and then just go to my news feed. I just posted it yesterday, so it should be in the last couple of posts. So here's the answer. Both photos are of the exact same bale of hay. Okay, the brownish colored picture is of the outside of the bale, and the greener colored picture is from the inside of the same bale. Okay, so the reason that the hay in the top picture, which is the more yellowy kind of brownish looking image, the reason that looks so bad is because it's been bleached by the sun. Okay, so don't let sun bleaching catch you off guard, okay? It's completely normal, and it happens. Sun bleaching can actually happen within 72 hours of being baled, okay? And that sun bleaching does not affect the nutritional value, okay? So when you go to, and when I say it doesn't affect the nutritional value, it's because it's only hitting that small outer covering of the bale, right? It's not actually bleaching all the way through the bale. So when you go to visually inspect hay, and when you're trying to make a judgment about hay just based on the visual quality, the best thing that you can do is actually open a bale and look at the inside. Okay, so don't just rely on what a bale looks like on the outside, because that can be very, very, very deceiving. Now, the next part of the question is, what did that hay actually test? And the answer is, it came back at an 8.5% crude protein, okay? So it also, some of its other values, it was 8% non-structural carbohydrates, and then the NDF value of it was 61%. So not terrible hay, but sure enough, not as good as a lot of people thought based on the picture of the inside of the bale. So this hay would basically be good enough for maintenance horses that are being ridden, you know, very, very lightly, a few hours a week, if at all being ridden. It would not be good enough on its own for a performance horse. Okay. But no worries. The owner didn't have to trash it. They just had to incorporate a few more calories and a little bit more protein into their diet from a good quality feed in order to meet the needs of their performance horses. So, you know, another thing to keep in mind, even the maintenance horses or the pasture ornaments, if you want to call them that, even though it satisfies, you know, maybe energy and protein needs, they still are going to need a vitamin and mineral supplement in order to balance out where that hay is deficient. Because if you recall from episodes that I've done in the past, hay almost always is not going to provide enough from a vitamin and trace mineral standpoint to satisfy a horse's needs. So you always need to consider either a loose vitamin mineral supplement or coming back in with a diet balancer. Okay. I hope you guys had fun with that little exercise. You will hear me talk until I'm blue in the face about the importance of testing your hay, and this is exactly the reason why. Okay, there's absolutely no way to tell the quality of a hay just by looking at it. Okay, so I mean, you can sure enough avoid some pretty terrible hay. Like, you know, I mean, if a hay has things like mold and weeds and trash, I mean, you can absolutely you know, avoid those things, but you cannot discern what the nutritional value of a hay is unless you actually have it tested. So in fact, I will go ahead and drop the analysis for this particular hay in the comments of that post on my newsfeed, on that social media channel, so you guys can see what it looks like if you're interested. So I'll be sure to drop that both on the Facebook and the Instagram channels. And then I will also leave in the show notes for this episode, I will leave the website address for EquiAnalytical. And that's the lab that I really like to use. So in case this exercise was just enough to finally convince someone that you should send your hay off for testing, I will drop that website in there so that you can go there, get all the information that you need to send your hay off to have it tested. Having your hay tested is, I mean, it's less than $30, and the information that you gain can really, really make a difference in understanding how you need to feed your horse over the winter. So especially if you have a horse that doesn't winter well, okay, this is the kind of information that you need in order to guide your decision-making process, right? So, I mean, if you have that kind of horse, you know, testing your hay is one of the most critical things you can do. And I see horse owners all of the time say, well, I've got, you know, this horse that, you know, he never holds weight well over the winter. He always gets a little bit poor. He loses weight, never looks good over the winter. And they try, you know, this supplement or that supplement or this feed or that feed, and they change up all of these things, but they don't really know why they're changing, right? They don't have a foundation because they've never actually had their hay tested. So it could be as simple as the quality of hay that they're feeding is just simply not good enough to supply that horse's basic needs. So again, you know, test your hay, test your hay, test your hay, right? I mean, that is absolutely the foundation of your horse's diet. So to go through life without ever testing your hay or ever knowing what that foundation is a little bit scary for someone like me. So again, please go test your hay. And then also just on as a side note, if you do have that kind of horse that doesn't winter well usually, another thing that you should do is get their teeth floated before winter sets in. Okay, so don't wait until spring. I see a lot of people will do their annual dentals in the spring, right before they're getting ready to get horses, you know, legged back up and get back into the swing of show season. But the reality is the reason, or one of the reasons, the nutritional reason that we have horses' teeth done is so that we know that they are getting a good grind, a good solid contact between the uppers and the lowers to make sure that they're able to fully break down and grind and process the forage that they're eating or the hay that they're eating through the wintertime. So we want to make sure that their teeth are in absolute tip-top shape going into winter, because that's when they need the maximum ability to grind and break down that hay to get the most nutrition out of it. Okay, well, that was a good kickoff into today's episode. And we're going to stay a little bit in the same vein, and we're going to talk about haylage. So one of our listeners, Kelly, wrote in and asked, Can you do a podcast on feeding haylage? The good, the bad, the ugly on it. What supplements and other feed requirements should be fed? My horses are fed haylage year-round. I have anywhere from 5 to 7 horses to feed, so the bale doesn't sit long enough to go bad. Also, I can't get it tested as it comes from different fields from my supplier. So the reason I feed it is I have no place to store dry hay and my supplier delivers me 20 bales at a time. Okay, thank you for that question, Kelly. We are getting a lot of listeners from a lot of different corners of the world. And so haylage is certainly going to be more readily available and more popular in certain areas of the world than others. So I think it's important for those who maybe aren't as familiar with haylage. I want to kind of get everybody oriented and on the same page. So there are generally 2 ways to put up harvested forage or to store forage. You can either bale it or you can ensile it. Okay. So if you choose to ensile it, you can turn it into full-on silage or you can create haylage. Okay. So the defining characteristic among all 3 of those between regular hay bales, silage, and haylage is going to be the moisture content. Okay. So if a producer is cutting forage to turn into just a normal dry hay bale, they generally are going to wait for, they're going to cut that hay, and then they're going to wait for it to dry out until the moisture is down to like around 10%, maybe 12% moisture at most before baling. So to put this in perspective, okay, most grass, when you cut it, whenever you actually go to cut and harvest grass, most grass is around 80% moisture. That's 80. Okay. So, I mean, it is mostly water, right? And so after it's cut, they have to let it dry, right? That's a lot of drying that has to happen before that grass or that forage can then be baled. So going from 80% moisture down to 10 or 12% moisture, right? That's a lot of drying that happens. Now, on the flip side, if a producer is making silage, okay, they want to maintain most of that moisture, right? They want to maintain a lot of that moisture. So they're not going to let that forage dry out. They're basically going to be packing that wilted high moisture content forage into these plastic wraps. And the goal there is to make a completely anaerobic environment. So an anaerobic environment is one where there's absolutely no oxygen, okay? The purpose of this is so that the natural microbes, okay, will start to ferment the sugars that are present in the grass. That then creates organic acids, so things like lactic acid or acetic acid. And it goes through this process, and after about 21 days, the pH of what's going on inside of that bale, the pH will have dropped low enough inside that microbial activity stops. Okay. And then it's at that point where it is considered stable and essentially ready for storage. Now, I mentioned hay is generally baled with around 10% moisture. Well, silage, okay, you're probably wondering what its moisture level is. So silage is packed at a moisture level that is above 40%, okay? And then right in between those two is what we call haylage. So haylage, it's processed a lot like silage, but the main difference is it is packed at a lower moisture content, okay? So the moisture content of haylage generally ranges between 15 and 40. So both haylage and silage are going to be in plastic wrapping, okay? So if you're looking at haylage bales, they're basically going to be wrapped up really tight in plastic. And it's really, really important that those bales are wrapped with enough layers to prevent puncture. Okay. The reason that is important is because the environment inside of that bale is supposed to have 0 oxygen, right? So if you punch a hole in the plastic, you obviously expose the contents inside that bale to oxygen, which the danger there is that you can get some secondary bacterial growth, and you can get some contaminant going on within the bales. So things like yeast, mold, mycotoxins, spoilage bacteria, right? None of that, which we want our horse to consume. So if you're feeding haylage, it is really important that you feed the bale quickly once you opened it. And Kelly mentioned that in when she wrote in with her question. She mentioned that, you know, she's got enough horses on a bale at a time that she's able to get it fed really quickly. And that's important because we don't want that bale to spoil once you cut the plastic and expose it to oxygen. Basically, from the moment that you cut that plastic and you expose that bale to oxygen, spoilage is initiated, right? So it's basically a race to get it fed out before it gets overly moldy or goes bad. So let's talk about maybe more of the nutritional aspects of haylage. Okay, so the most important thing to understand is the quality of the haylage that you get out is completely representative of the quality of the forage that you put in. So ensiling bad or overly mature forage does not make it better, right? So you have to have good going in order to have good coming out, right? So in fact, ensiling can actually reduce protein quality. So if you are feeding growing or performance horses, you need to be really careful that you are not undersupplying the daily protein needs if you're choosing to use haylage for those horses. There's actually research that suggests that ensiled feeds can be slightly more digestible. But again, the digestibility, it's much more heavily influenced by the maturity of the forage when it was cut, right? So back to this, what you get in is what you get out, okay? So what I mean by that is if you harvested or the producer harvested that grass or that forage when it was really immature, very soft, really early growth, and they baled it just as like a typical grass hay. They cut it, they let it dry down to that 10% moisture, and then they baled it as grass hay. That digestibility would actually be higher than if you were to let that same field grow an extra 2 or 3 weeks and then turn it into haylage. Okay, so it's again the same field, hay off of the same field. One was cut 2 to 3 weeks earlier, turned into regular hay. The other was cut 2 to 3 weeks later, turned into haylage. Okay. In that situation, that regular hay is probably going to have a better digestibility content. Okay. Now, on the other hand, let's say you were to cut that same field at the exact same time and you turned half of it into haylage and then you turned the other half into regular hay bales. The digestibility of the haylage in that situation would be just a touch better than the regular grass hay. I hope that that makes sense. So I guess the take-home note on what the point that I'm trying to make here is you cannot make blanket statements that, you know, all haylage is more digestible than regular hay, right? It all comes down to the type of forage, especially the maturity level at the time that it was cut, okay? So again, this is a major reason that we need to test our hay and even our haylage, right? Because I would venture to guess that 99% of us, I'm pulling that number out of thin air, but the vast, vast, vast majority of us are not, we're not cutting our own hay, right? And the majority of horse owners are not, and myself included, we're not well-versed enough in plant biology to be able to say exactly, you know, name every species of grass that's in a bale and exactly what stage of growth that grass was in when it was cut, right? So there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to understanding the nutritional content of our forage that can certainly be kind of brought into light if we spend that $30 and have our forage tested. So another thing to consider when feeding haylage is the amount that you actually have to feed. Okay, so since haylage can be up to 40% moisture, that means that you're going to have to feed almost double the amount that you would of normal hay. So a good rule of thumb, generally when you're feeding a horse, you want them to consume 2% of body weight on a dry matter basis. All right, and it's that last piece that most people leave off when they're talking about this concept. You might hear, and you've probably even heard me talk about it in the past, you know, feed 2% of body weight, feed 2% of body weight. But we never take that extra step and say 2% of body weight on a dry matter basis, okay? And so the reason that this is important in this situation is because haylage has a really high moisture content. So now dry matter basis starts to mean something. Okay, so let me give you an example. let's say you have an 1100 pound or a 500 kilogram horse. Okay, if you feed 25 pounds of hay, just regular baled hay, each day that has a moisture content of 10%, okay, that means they are going to get 22.5 pounds of dry matter. Okay, so that gives you that 22 pounds meets the 2% of body weight. And then I like that extra half a pound just because it gives you the ability. I mean, horses are going to waste a little bit of hay, right? Whether it's blowing away in the wind or they're dunking it or dropping it in water or in their stall and it's getting mixed around with shavings or they're urinating on it or stomping on it or whatever. Horses are really good at figuring out ways to waste hay, right? So I always like to give just a little bit extra and err on that side of overfeeding rather than underfeeding. Now, in order, so let's say, so that's what things look like on regular hay bales, right? If you want them to have 22 pounds of dry matter intake, you have to feed 25 pounds of hay. Okay, that's assuming that hay is 10% moisture. So if you want to have the same daily dry matter intake using haylage, and that haylage has a 40% moisture content, you would actually have to feed 37.5 pounds of haylage per day in order to hit that exact same 22 pound dry matter intake. Okay, so going from normal hay to haylage is absolutely not a one-for-one transition. So anybody considering this, okay, you can't just go pound for pound, all right? It is very important that you understand how much moisture is in that haylage so that you can decide how much total weight you should feed per day, okay? So another way to look at this, if you are feeding haylage, you're basically paying for water, right? So almost half of that is water, okay? So if you're comparing the cost of a bale of normal hay to a bale of haylage, and let's say that they weigh the exact same weight, okay, that haylage had better be around half the price of a regular bale because it's only going to last half as long, right? Because you have to feed twice as much, right? So I'm kind of making generalities here, but it's really important to know, you know, exactly how much your hay or your haylage bales weigh so that you can put pencil to paper or finger to touch screen and calculate that true daily cost of the forage that you're using. There are a lot of people out there that are overpaying for their hay because they think of cost in terms of price per bale. And what you really need to be looking at is the price per pound or the price per kilogram, depending on what part of the world you're in. Another thing to remember with haylage, you can actually run into what we call hot spots inside of the bale. So these are areas where the haylage basically becomes completely rotten or not fully, maybe it didn't fully ferment in that area, okay? So it basically means that there's these little spots throughout the bale that are not homogeneous or consistent or the same as the rest of the bale, okay? So these are usually caused when things like maybe some soil, maybe manure, or maybe even dead rodents from the field actually can get baled up and processed into that haylage bale. Now, the biggest danger here is going to be that secondary bacteria that can grow in those spots, okay? So think of organisms like botulism, right? Horses are really sensitive to the toxins that are produced by botulism. So if they were to accidentally ingest them, it would be bad. It could certainly cause death. But also, I guess, probably important to note, don't think that normal hay can't carry that same risk, right? So if you're feeding normal hay bales, and let's say that maybe they were put up a little bit too wet, maybe that moisture content got above that threshold, and there's just enough moisture in there that's going to heat up the inside of those bales. That's when bales can actually become a fire risk, right? They can actually basically explode, right? Heat up so much that they start on fire from the inside out. Mold can grow in those heated up bales, and then toxins can be produced as well. So, you know, no matter what you choose to feed, whether it's a regular hay bale or a haylage bale, right? You have to monitor those bales when you're feeding them to make sure that they're clean, right? Don't just feed blindly. Now, the last piece of information that I will leave you with, whether you are feeding hay bales or haylage, I want you to remember to provide vitamins and trace minerals. Okay, so you can do this with a diet balancer, such as 101 Diet Balancer from Stride Animal Health. That's one of my favorites. Or you can just simply use a commercially available fortified feed that has the actual vitamins and trace minerals guaranteed in it. Specifically, trace mineral wise, I really like to make sure that you've got copper and zinc guaranteed. Understand what your selenium content is. Vitamins, vitamin A and vitamin E are both really, really important ones to have guaranteed. Vitamin D. I love the feeds that go that step further and actually guarantee the two B vitamins, riboflavin and thiamine. Okay, so there's a lot that you're going to miss out if you're feeding a forage-only diet. Even if it is haylage, you still need to make sure that you're providing a package of vitamins and trace minerals. Hay or haylage alone will not meet those needs for horses. I hope that this has helped you all understand the differences between regular hay and haylage. Like I said, there are certain parts of the world where haylage is going to be more popular, right? It may be in areas where it doesn't dry out enough. You know, there are a lot of places where it rains all the time. I'm not familiar with those places. It's dry all the time here. But there are places where it rains enough that you can't cut hay and get it dried out enough to bale it as regular hay. And so in those situations, haylage is really going to be a much more abundant source to horse owners. And it's a really good alternative for as a fiber source for your horses. If you have access to good quality horse hay, like the normal, 10% moisture horse hay, I guess I would probably be of the opinion that it's not worth the extra effort and the extra money that it would take to go try to find haylage and have it shipped in. I don't think, there are other ways to ensure that you're getting good digestibility, good protein content, all of those things in your horse's diet just out of out of normal horse hay that would be readily available in many parts of the world, certainly in the United States, very abundant, good quality horse hay available. So that would be my first choice. So haylage would definitely be a fallback option for me. I wouldn't go seek it out unless I lived in an area where it just was almost impossible to actually get good quality, dried down horse hay. Remember, you can follow me now on Facebook and Instagram. Just search at Dr. Jimmy. I would love it if you guys would leave me a rating and a review on my Facebook page. And then also, if you would do the same on the podcasting app that you're using, doing that will just help more people find out about Feed Room Chemist, and it'll help empower more horse owners, right? My intent is to kind of create this movement of empowering horse owners and empowering people to be able to make smart, science-based decisions. And I would really appreciate it if you guys would help me in that quest. And then don't forget to use the hashtag FeedRoomChemist when you're making your posts so that I can follow all your conversations. And lastly, if you'd like to get in touch with someone, if you're needing a little bit of nutrition advice, I encourage you to fill out the nutrition consultation form. You can get that at online at bluebonnetfeeds.com/nutrition-consult. And someone from my team will get in touch and be able to give you a personalized recommendation. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.